This is All In. I'm Taylor Bennett. Today we're talking about concerts during a pandemic and what live music will be like in a post-pandemic Indiana. If you have questions or comments on our show today, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. You just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation. Again, that number is 866-476-3881. You can also send us high-quality voice messages with our smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. It's free, easy to use. You just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Today, we're joined by three guests. I'd like to welcome Mark Allen, a former music critic for the Indy Star. Also, Dave Lindquist is an entertainment journalist and host of The Beat on 92.3 WTTS. And Steve Simbesma is a longtime concert promoter in the state who helped develop Deer Creek Music Center. I'd like to welcome all of our guests today. Well, I have to tell you, I'm very excited about this show. I'm a huge live music fan, and I definitely missed some of the shows last year. Mark, do you think that we'll ever see concerts again as they were pre-pandemic?
We'll see them again. I don't know if how pre-pandemic they'll be for a while. I think it's going to take a people getting comfortable and wanting to sit next to other people. You know, I think about my situation. I mean, I'm 62 years old now. I like to go to the Hi-Fi in Fountain Square, and you know, there are usually a couple hundred people there, and you're shoulder to shoulder. I'm probably not going to be real comfortable with that. I think younger people will be fine, and they're probably fine already. But So it's just going to depend on people's comfort level for at least a little while.
Right. Well, again, you know, like you said, the physical return is just going to be complicated, I think, by the social distancing requirements. Do people feel comfortable going to a crowded room, sitting that close, like you said, shoulder to shoulder, and watching a show? Like you said, maybe some people will, maybe some won't.
Yeah, I mean, and it'll take a little while, and eventually, like everything else, we'll just revert back to form.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on Indiana clubs and the bars having shows again at a smaller capacity?
It's the affordability factor, I think. I mean, Steve can speak to this much more than I can because he knows how bands are paid. But I just think that it's going to take, if you need 800 people in the room to make the concert pay, and you can only put 400 people in the room, that's a problem.
Dave, have you attended any shows during the pandemic?
Yes, actually, I attended a Hi-Fi show a week and a half ago. Jay Elliott was the headliner for their first night back indoors. It was reduced capacity, but it still seemed like a good number of people were there. One of the things they've added is an app for ordering drinks, which is, you know, very hands-off in terms of interacting with workers at the place. So that was pretty comfortable. I also attended a drive-in theater show in September with the band Local H. They came down to Shelbyville, and that was pretty fun. And I also attended the Brad Paisley parking lot show at Ruoff Music Center last summer, part of a three-show series, I think they did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not like concerts like we used to know, but I was surprised at both the Local H show and the Brad Paisley show at the sense of communal audience that was established. So I don't think it's a question of if shows will come back, just a question of when.
Right. What was, what was the turnout like for people? I mean, was there a lot of people there? Did the atmosphere seem like people were comfortable?
At the Hi-Fi?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was a sellout, and I believe they were capped at 25% of capacity. But I've been at that room where there have been fewer people on a regular night, so it didn't seem like a ghost town. People weren't knuckleheads, and I think everyone is definitely in the mindset of if we can have the chance again to see a show, let's do it in a safe way.
Yeah. Steve, I wanted to ask you about outdoor shows during the pandemic. What is that looking like?
Well, you know, I've been on some industry chats recently, and, you know, people are holding shows or talking about shows in August, September, but they're still not sure about them. It's still tentative about how things are going to be. But it seems like with the vaccinations and things that it should be okay by then. People are feeling like it should be okay. I have no idea what Live Nation Indiana is thinking or what their thoughts are, but I'm just, you know, giving kind of a national overview of what I've heard.
So. You're a former owner of, and I'm always going to refer to it. I have been around that long where it's always going to be Deer Creek to me. I think I probably even still say Deer Creek. But what do you see happening out there right now?
Again, I don't know what their plans are. I think they'll get things going as soon as they can. You know, but it's already March. They haven't made any announcements that I've heard. But I know everybody's anxious to get back. And I've heard about some European shows going on sale, some festivals in Europe, and they sold out like instantly. There's a huge pent up demand for people wanting to go to concerts. So the people that are afraid to go might be offset by the people that aren't afraid to go, that are willing to take the risk. So, you know, it's really an unknown, but I think that things are going to come back very strong.
Yeah, I mean, it is an unknown, but do you think that it might be likely that we could have those concerts at some point this year?
I personally think so. If people keep getting vaccinated, you know, what I've heard from the vaccination thing is that once you're vaccinated, you can be around people that have not been vaccinated in a fairly safe manner. So the more people that get vaccinated and the more we get toward herd immunity, I think it's going to get better and better. But that's just my personal opinion.
Yeah. Mark, what do you think it's going to take for shows to get back to how they were before the pandemic?
Well, I think Steve's right. I think once you announce the shows, people want to go. I mean, I can tell you, I haven't seen a live concert since last February, a year ago February, I should say. And I would really like to see some live music. The last time I went that long was ages 0 to 14. And I've been going ever since, and I don't want to stop, so... you know, people will want to go. I'm not ready to go yet, but I think there are a lot of people who are.
Yeah. What about some of the smaller venues? I know last summer, I live in Fishers, and they had their summer concert series, and I think they had the Jazz Festival, and they were adhering to the social distancing. They had people spread apart. Obviously, that's not a huge crowd, but, you know, again, it was something I think that it was crowded. A lot of people felt comfortable coming back and listening to music outside.
Yeah, I mean, I think people want it and they will find a way to get it. But of course, it has to be presented first. So the bands have to want to do it and the promoters have to want to do it and the people will come.
Yeah, you know, definitely the fans want to go see a live show, but you have to look at the other side of it, too. I mean, what is this doing to the musicians? I mean, obviously, that's had a huge impact on those that this is their livelihood. They tour.
Anybody?
Dave, what do you think?
Well, on the one hand, I think we're getting a lot of recorded music right now. These musicians have had time to write and record things in the studio. There's also been the rise, of course, of concert live streams, which I've tuned into some. And again, that's not like being in the room with a bunch of fans and the artist, but it's a reasonable facsimile. And there are some things that you get from live streams that you can't get from a show in person, such as chatting with fellow fans, which is a lot better than, you know, people talking over people at a show, which is one of my all-time pet peeves.
Mm-hmm. definitely. What is it like, though, the virtual? I mean, is, obviously it's not the same thing, but it's like you could watch it on YouTube.
Yes. So there's another question. At the beginning of the pandemic and lockdown, you know, so many musicians were giving it away on YouTube and Facebook. Now I think just out of smarts, they're selling the shows through a number of platforms, including one based in Indianapolis called Mandolin. And it's, you know, it's a multi-camera, high-definition experience, and these companies, these platforms, aren't planning for their business to go up in smoke at the end of the pandemic. They're hoping that when artists and management teams plan their tours after the pandemic, hey, let's put in our plan at least one live stream event so we can get people paying $20 from, you know, the other side of the world where this tour is not going to go. I think that's been an eye opener for the industry, that revenue stream.
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's a trickle down effect. Obviously, you need the musicians and the artists. They go home. They have to pay the bills. And then, you know, then when you have those concert venues, you have people that are employed there that are also being impacted by this as well.
Definitely.
Yeah. What about the local musicians, Dave? What, I mean, you've interviewed them. What are they saying at this point?
Oh, I think they're eager to play music and accept paying gigs. But I also think there are lots of patient musicians who don't want to do things that are risky. I mean, it's mm-hmm. Kind of a case-by-case individual basis. I was talking to a saxophone player who said early in the lockdown, relatively early, he took a wedding gig. And he said he felt very uncomfortable. I mean, if you're a saxophone player, that's just like a droplets festival. And, you know, at a wedding reception, he said people started maybe lowering their guard in terms of safety.
Wow. All right. Well, we'll have more to talk about. We'll be right back with our guest after just a quick break. We're talking about the current state and future of live music in Indiana. I'm Taylor Bennett. We'll be right back. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Taylor Bennett. Well, today we're talking about live music in Indiana, its past, its present, and also post-pandemic future. We'd love to hear your questions and comments on this topic. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. And don't forget, you can also send us a voice message through our free smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. You just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. You send us your question or comment, and we will try to get it onto the show today. Steve, I wanted to talk to you about concert promoters and how they're doing during the pandemic. And I mean, this was a big business, and it definitely took a big hit last year.
Well, it's been really tough. Really tough on anybody in the music business, you know. You know, the big companies, Live Nation and AG, laid off a tremendous amount of people that its livelihoods depend on the live concert business. So they're running it kind of skeleton crews, as far as I know. And a lot of companies, you know, that they're just shut down. You know, they're just not doing anything. And some of the promoters that I know, you know, have staff that they've had for years that they're keeping them on. But it's not been easy for anybody. That's for sure.
Yeah. So, what are your thoughts on the Save Our Stages passing as part of the COVID-19 relief bill?
I really don't know that much about it. And I don't know how much that's going to go and help people. I think that probably is, but I haven't followed it a lot because I haven't, you know, look for any help or anything, but I don't know that much about it.
Yeah. What about you, Mark? What do you think about? Do you see that it could have an impact? Do you think it's too late?
I think it can have some impact. I mean, music's going to come back, It just, maybe it'll be different with different promoters. I don't know. But, you know, I think a company like Live Nation can weather this storm, and probably others can too. Some of the smaller venues, it's going to be a lot tougher.
Yeah. I want to get to some fun stuff as far as some of the favorite places to see a show. Dave, you've seen a lot of shows. What's one of your favorite places?
Oh, in Indianapolis, I would say for me, the best concert experience is the Marat Theater, which Steve renovated in the mid-90s. Thank you for giving that to Indianapolis, Steve.
You're welcome.
And you don't even have to be super close in that room. I like being in the royalty seats, kind of over on the side and the balcony. It's an experience like no other around here.
I have to give Dave Lucas even greater credit. He spearheaded the Murat project while I was in Louisville working on the Palace Theater project. So Dave Lucas really spearheaded that and did most of the work on the Murat. So.
Now, Dave, do you have a favorite a show that stands out that at the Murat?
Oh, I got to see David Bowie in that room. REM played that room. So when those massive acts can play a room that's, caps out at 2,500, that's really special. And if I could back up just a second, Taylor, I had a comment on small venues mm-hmm. and their survival regarding the Save Our Stages part of the relief bill that was passed right before the end of 2020, which was a great headline and made everybody feel really great. Unfortunately, the Small Business Administration has not yet opened applications for venues to even raise their hand and say, you know, that money is for us and we'd like some of it. So they're not out of the woods yet by any means.
They have not, as far as the small businesses, they have not said anything about it?
Well, the gatekeeper of the money is the Small Business Administration. Mm-hmm. They have to say, okay, applications are now open for this money. And that has not happened yet.
When do you think something could happen? I mean, are you keeping track of it?
Well, I mean, it's a waiting game on the U.S. government. That's all I know about it.
Yeah. What do you think would Indiana be like? I mean, anywhere. I mean, you could say this. But what would Indiana be like if we didn't have live music, if we're going to go down that road?
It's not worth thinking about.
It's a little depressing, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah.
No, there will be live music. It will be back. I think Steve's right. I think late summer, you'll start to see it in earnest. But it's coming back. Yeah. It has to.
I want to ask everybody about their first concert, because I have a funny story to tell you about my first concert. But Dave, what was your first concert?
Okay. I grew up in Central Illinois. And I was very active in the Future Farmers of America, and I was active in livestock judging. And we did a field trip when I was in high school to the Illinois State Fair in Springfield, Illinois. And just happened to be that night, Survivor was headlining at the grandstand, which is not a great first concert. But I always have my saving grace, as the opening act was Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. So that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. What about the rest of you? We want to share your first concert experience.
Steve, go ahead. Oh, I think you're muted, Steve.
My first concert was the Beach Boys at the Indiana State Fairgrounds Coliseum. And I remember it well, standing in the crowd, being squashed on the floor, watching the show. It was great.
I'm glad that you brought the State Fair up, because this was my first concert. This is going to date myself, because this goes way back. 1977. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Bay City Rollers. I went with my mom, and she dropped her coat, and there was a stampede for everybody once they opened it up to go up to the grandstand. And it was quite the experience. But I made a little banner, plaid banner, because, you know, the Bay City Rollers were from Scotland, and that was my first introduction to a concert. Now I've been to a ton more. That my music taste varies since then, but yeah, that was fun.
Had some Nick Lowe to cue, right?
Yeah, my Beach Boys show was probably in 1963, so 77 wasn't that long ago.
I was just a tad little girl, but yeah, when you have to go with your mom to a concert.
My first show was Diodato. It was April 20th, 1973. And he had a hit with a synthesizer version of the 2001 Space Odyssey theme.
Oh.
But the first act that I ever saw on stage, Freddie Hubbard from Indianapolis.
There you go. It was meant
to
be.
The opening act.
Steve, what about you?
Well, the Beach Boys, as I said,
mm-hmm.
you mean, what, other than
any
that, what do you
favorites?
Mean? Oh, favorite shows? Mm-hmm. Oh, so many.
I know.
People ask me that all the time, and it's just so hard to say. I mean, Prince was amazing when we did that show with Prince, mm-hmm. Michael Jackson, live show at Market Square Arena, just so many. The Rolling Stones in 1975 was our first show with the Rolling Stones. I mean, that was just amazing, so just so many. I a lot of Rush shows in my life. The guys in Rush were pretty good friends in the early 70s and 80s when we toured a lot together. So
yeah, I have a photo. I was using the Rush drums. Believe it or not, I can send it to you if you don't believe me. I was pretending. I was pretending that I was a rock star, and right on it. It was his drum set. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, Neil Peart's kit was at the Rhythm Discovery Zone for several years.
Yeah.
And yesterday, Jim Irsay announced that he's going to loan his Ringo Ed Sullivan kit to the Rhythm Discovery Zone for about a year, starting on Final Four weekend.
Is that still open?
The Rhythm Discovery Zone?
Yeah.
I believe on Final Four weekend it will be.
Okay, because it has been a couple of years, and that's actually where I saw those drums and pretended.
Right.
Yeah. So that was really cool to see. That's a cool.
Speaking of the Beatles, I know Steve might have crashed a show at the fairgrounds.
Well, I did go to the show. I didn't crash it, but I was there. I watched the grandstand show from the outside in 1964, I guess. Outside the fence, I could see the stage. I couldn't hear anything because all the screaming. But I also saw them when they got out of the limousine. I worked my way over to where the limousines let the guys out to go into the Coliseum for the daytime show. So I was there that day.
You could say you were there. You were there.
Yeah.
You have promoted concerts for a long time in the state, almost 30 years.
Right. I promoted from 72 to 2000. And then 2000, I resigned from what was, we sold our company in 97. And then we were purchased by Bob Silerman, who was, I guess, SFX Entertainment. And then he sold to Clear Channel, which then became Live Nation. So that's what happened in 2000. I resigned and took a sabbatical and then moved to China in 2003 and promoted shows there for 11 years. So,
wow. How did you get into that?
Did a lot of great shows in China, including James Brown. The show the year he died was an amazing experience.
Yeah. So,
Elton John and many others.
Steve, what does it take to put on a successful concert?
Well, in simplistic terms, you need a band that people want to see and a place to put it on. But, I guess to explain what a concert promoter does is we hire the band, we rent the venue, we advertise the concert, we sell the tickets, and we hope we sell enough to make money. And sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. So that's a simple explanation of putting on a concert.
Yeah. What made you get into it at the first? How did you even get into it?
I lived with three other guys in a kind of a crazy house in 1971. And one of the guys that lived, one was a record rep. One was a DJ on Wife Radio, and the other was an agent for Go-Go Girls. And he and I decided we just put on a rock concert, and that's how I got into it. And we just, you know, started calling agents and getting no return calls, and we just kept at it until we finally gave up and trying to do a national show. We did a local show. We did a show at Melody Skateland in 1972, January 2nd, 1972 was my first show. Mm-hmm. And it was with was Roadmaster's predecessor, Pure Funk. It was with Faith Band's predecessor, Limousine, and a few other bands. And we did pretty well. We did enough people that we made $300 on the show. So,
well, there you go. You probably have made a little bit more since then, huh?
A few times. Yeah.
That's amazing. I'm sure you have a lot of great stories. Do you ever have put this down anywhere, write a book?
Well, I am in the process of writing a book right now. So.
Well, there you go. Yeah. When can we expect all these stories to come out?
Maybe a year.
Yeah.
Maybe about a year.
All right. Some juicy stories.
I'm got to leave most of them out.
Why?
I'll put in the fun ones. Yeah, but some I have to leave out. Anyway,
I want to ask you about, again, going back. I'm going to call it Deer Creek, because this is out there over 30 years. Do you still people come up to you and go Deer Creek, even though it's gone through several name changes?
I don't call it anything but Deer Creek, and I never have, so it's not uncommon for me. So
You can go through so many name changes, but those that have been around this area for a long time and went there, it's always going to be Deer Creek. What was it like? What was it like in the early days?
Well, it was pretty amazing. First of all, it was a long fight to get it to open, but once we opened in 1989, it was a pretty amazing year. We had a talent lineup. That year, we had 54 shows, and we had Frank Sinatra and Metallica and Sandy Patty, and I think we had the Allman Brothers almost every year there. But so the Allman Brothers were probably there in that year. I can't remember specifically all the 55 shows off the top of my head, but I know that it was, an amazing year. I think Bob Hope also performed there that year, and it was a real thrill for me to meet Frank Sinatra and Bob Hope, and be able to, put them in my notch that I promoted Frank Sinatra and Bob Hope, so those were very cool. Doing my first Beach Boys show,
Yeah. So. Was it strange that this venue was out in the middle, basically, of a cornfield?
I guess, I don't know if it was strange. It seemed far away when we first bought the property, and we were a little bit concerned about it, but it certainly worked out for sure. And the reason we ended up there is because after trying four other locations, we finally found a piece of ground that was not zoned. So our legal battles to get permission to build we were able to overcome those to be able to build it.
Yeah. So, what are your thoughts on that venue's growth?
Well, it's an amazing venue. When we built the venue, we took the architect with us to 15 different amphitheaters throughout the United States. And we tried to pick the best pieces of each one. And we tried to build the best amphitheater. When we built it, that year we were voted the best new venue in America, our best new amphitheater in America. And so we're very proud of it. But it's amazing that
it's been so successful in the Indianapolis market. I think it was in 2018, it was the number one amphitheater in the world. And all the years that we ran it, it was in the top 5, 6, 7 amphitheaters as far as attendance and gross dollars and stuff. But it's always been up in the top. And for some reason, I think, you know, it's one of the top amphitheaters in the world still.
So, yeah. Well, it holds.
Very proud of that.
You should be. It holds a lot of great memories for a lot of people, including myself. We'll be right back after a quick break. We're talking live music memories in Indiana and how the pandemic will affect future ones. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. And you can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Again, that's 866-476-3881. I'm Taylor Bennett. We'll be right back. This is All In. And this is All In. I'm Taylor Bennett. I have to give a shout out to that bumper music before we went into our break. Life Patrol and Louie Louie, Indianapolis-based bands. Great music there. Mark, you have interviewed a lot of touring musicians. Can you share some of your favorite interviews that you've had over the years?
My favorite interviews? Well, I have a podcast of old interviews called The Tapes Archive. And we just posted Sammy Hagar, and Sammy's great because you can go and ask him a question, and then you can go get a bite to eat, you can get your car washed and detailed, and come back, and he's still answering the question. So that's kind of fun. Yeah, Sammy was amazing. I mean, my favorite interview is Neil Peart from Rush, who I interviewed 3 times, and The thing I liked about him and about Peter Buck from REM was I was not a fan of either of those groups when I did the interview. And after I talked to the guys, I thought, I'm missing something because these guys are very, very smart. And went back and listened, and yes, I was missing something. So those are probably my favorites.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about that project that you have on as far as the tapes are concerned, those interviews. How many have you compiled?
Well, I probably have a box of about 400 tapes or so. And I have a friend, Alan Berry, who has been asking me for years, put them on a podcast, do something with them. And I always thought, who wants to listen to this? But Alan convinced me, and I don't know, so far it's worked out okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's not making any money, but it's doing fine as far as listenership.
Right. I would imagine so. You have a lot of great interviews there. We do have a question from a listener on Twitter who asks, can you talk about Roadmaster and some of the other local bands of note?
Yeah, I mean, Roadmaster was a little bit before my time, so it was a little bit before Dave's time. But, you know, it was the kind of everybody who came along after Roadmaster sort of set the standard, I think, for local bands and you know, getting some fame and some acclaim. And, you know, those guys were around for a long time and did. They were very popular. Steve, you must have done Roadmaster shows, right?
Well, as I said, Roadmaster, before they were Roadmaster, was pure funk. And that, they were on the very first show I promoted in 1972. And then later on, I don't remember exactly what year it was. I have 2 partners, of course, at Sunshine, Dave Lucas and Joe Holderman. And Joe Holderman spearheaded the management side of the company, and we managed Roadmaster for several years and Faith Band. I know them all very well. They're great friends. And I spent many, many nights at the patio watching Roadmaster and Faith Band play there. And it was amazing. They're amazing groups. and amazing people in the groups, and it, just really good people. So all good friends and all and great bands.
What about some other local bands that you can think of? A note, I know there's a lot of them.
There's so many. And I hate to start naming one or two and leaving out so many others.
Right.
You know, like, for me, the biggest one, I mean, the Vulgar Boatmen were huge when I was covering music in the 90s. And there were a lot of great bands coming through at that point. But Dave, I mean, you have 20-some years of covering local, so and up to almost today. Yeah. So you've probably got a lot more.
Dave, you've written about music and pop culture for a long time when you were with the Star. What's some of your unexpected or maybe just some of your most memorable moments at shows that you had when you were there?
Well, not to set a depressing tone, but certainly nothing can rival the night of the stage rigging collapse at the Indiana State Fair in 2011. Mm-hmm. Local acts that have really made a mark, I would have to include the Mud Kids as a hip-hop act that showed Indianapolis how to record on a regular basis on a high quality, to do live shows. And that's an act that's certainly laid the foundation for a really vibrant hip-hop scene in town today. I can't wait for the Trees Festival to be able to be back in Fountain Square. They had built up a lot of momentum over their first 5 years, weren't able to have a festival in 2020, but fingers crossed for 2021. The beginning of my time at the Star kind of coincided with the rise of Napster. So one of the things that I really like to think about is how that kind of splintered the entire music industry to the point where, you know, you can be a working musician, you can travel the world and play to rooms where there are 100 to 200 people and make a living and still be unknown to 99.9% of the public. Some people think that's a great thing. Some people think that's not a great thing. But if you're one of those musicians, it's a really fantastic way to earn a living where maybe in the old days you were shut out. And certainly a couple of names that come to mind from Indiana are the Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band, Otis Gibbs. These are people who have nice careers but aren't household names.
Yeah. What are some other Indiana artists do you think that our listeners should check out live once it is safe?
Oh, good question, Taylor. So I have the show on WTTS once a week, and I've been able to find spots in it to play new music by some of these acts. Wife Patrol, who, as you mentioned, was just in the bumper music for our show here. There's a strong band called Bullet Points. In a couple of weeks, I get to play a song by Zero Boys, which is kind of crazy that it's a new recording. That's a iconic Indiana band from the early 80s. You know, actually put out a record that is better than 75 to 80% of the punk rock records that you're told are the best punk rock records, but you got to listen to Zero Boys, Vicious Circle from 1981. But anyway, they've released on vinyl some songs that were written by their original guitarist that the band never recorded, but they've recorded recently. Yeah, anytime you get a chance, you don't see the Zero Boys on stage often, but don't miss them if you can.
I always love discovering new music and new artists, and there's so many out there. What's your favorite music? What do you tend to gravitate toward?
Is that a question for me?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you want to answer it.
Well, I thought I had and Mark and Steve also knows how this goes. You think that you had a wide appreciation of music, like a wide swath of genres and styles.
Right.
Until you do the job and then you realize, wow, you really only were hitting the tip of the iceberg. But when pressed, people ask me who my favorite artists are. And this is just purely personal preference. I'm a big fan of this band Wilco from Chicago and this defunct band Fugazi from Washington, D.C., and eternally P.J. Harvey, the singer-songwriter from England. That's all for me.
That's all for
me. I don't know who has more energy. When I used to do AC/DC shows, they had so much energy when they started their show.
I love AC/DC.
I always had to be out there for the beginning of the show. It was just amazing. And I loved to watch that band.
And they have an album coming out. I love AC/DC. I still play AC/DC.
Yeah.
I still have my AC/DC t-shirts.
Yeah. Of course, Rush too.
Yeah.
Aerosmith, I don't know. There's just so many. Yeah. Aerosmith was another great band.
I tend to be an 80s girl. I play a lot of 80s music. I tend to always gravitate toward 80s music.
As you can see, I'm kind of mentioning some 70s bands.
Yeah. I think every decade has good music, though.
For sure.
Yeah. You know, everybody thinks, or they want to be a critic. I guess, Dave, how do you review a concert when you go? What's your plan from start to finish when you critique?
We didn't get to hear Mark talk about Little Feet.
We got time for a story if you want.
Well, there's no story. I just love Little Feet. That's my favorite band.
So. Oh, I'm sensing there is a story.
No, not really.
I
interviewed Lowell George 9 days before he died. That's about as close to a story as I have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's the, you know, that goes back a long ways. But yes, I have no story about that.
I want a juicy story before we leave today. Come on, guys. There's got to be something.
I can answer your question, though, Taylor. And certainly Mark Allen mentored me a lot in the job at the Star as the music reporter. And I think this is probably advice that he gave me is that, yes, I'm not a fan of every act that I cover in a live setting. So when I walk in the door, I try to put myself in the mindset of, if I were a fan of this act, what are my expectations? And if you use that as kind of your goalposts, you can think about things like, did they play the songs that, you know, I want to hear as a fan, if I were a fan?
Mm-hmm.
Sound quality is probably my least favorite thing to write about at a show, but it is so important in terms of the consumer experience. And promoters like Steve probably aren't huge fans when they see critics writing about how the sound was sometimes at shows. But again, it's you want to be on the audience's side.
Oh, definitely. I've gone to concerts where the acoustics are so bad and you can't even understand it. So you can critique that.
And I critiqued it. It's often not the room, of course. It's the crew and how much care they want to put into the show. If they throw up all the gear like they did last night in Detroit without, you know, trying to make this room in Indianapolis sound good,
mm-hmm.
You can have problems.
Did you give a really bad review and then get flack for it? I suppose you probably get that a lot, huh? If you give
that's
a bad
one
review.
For Mark.
Yeah,
that's Mark's.
I have a sort of infamous review of Fish. That I'm still, somebody tweeted just the other day about that review. I mean, it was 1997. I just want to say, give it up already.
What did you say?
But, I basically said that in describing what I thought was a fairly terrible concert, I said that you could pee in Fish fan's ear and tell him that it's music, and he would turn on a tape recorder to capture the moment. And yeah, that wasn't that didn't go over real well. The lucky part, see, Dave had a much harder job than I did because he had to deal with social media and email. Email was relatively new, and social media didn't exist when I was writing. So you had to write a letter to me. You know, you had to find a piece of paper and a stamp and an envelope. And so it was a very different experience. Meanwhile, they could, you know, write to Dave instantly and tell him, you know, that they thought he was a jerk or whatever. Yeah, so that was it. I mean, you know, I had Dave also had a much harder job than I did, in the sense that he had to cover a lot of ground that I never had to cover. I mean, I could go to rock concerts and things like that. I mean, Dave covered pretty much everything for a while. He was about the only reporter, the only arts reporter at the Star. So he had to have a breadth of knowledge that I did not have to have. And thank goodness for that.
Yeah, Dave, I mean, I'm sure the social media kind of changed everything. I mean, like you said, you know, people could tweet at you and still tweet at you. And you've got that playing a part of how people communicate with whatever you do.
Right. When something is published on the internet, I'm no longer writing for just the 15,000 Ariana Grande fans at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. Those words can be accessed by 7 million Ariana Grande fans. So you don't want to slip up and say someone's on stage that wasn't there that night, or get a song title wrong, or stuff like that.
Yeah. Why do you think that touring bands like to play here in Indiana?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think they want to come here because they'll go anywhere where it pays, right? I mean, that's the bottom line. But, I mean, the audiences here are pretty polite. And, you know, this used to be a town of standing ovations for everything, no matter what. It got a little more critical over the years. But, you know, I think they come here and they like it. And some people love it. I mean, Bon Jovi, this was one of his favorite places to play because, Market Square Arena, he just loved that. He had great memories. Tom Petty used to love to play Deer Creek, The Dead, Fish. Lots of bands. It's just, you know, they're also treated well, I think, when they come here, right? I mean, the promoter, and a lot of credit to Steve and Dave, they know what they're doing, and they knew how to take care of bands, how to make sure that everybody had a good experience at their shows.
That's true, but it's also a lot about the venues. I think they remember the towns because of the venues, you know, so they do like Deer Creek. They did like Market Square Arena. I'm not sure how they feel about the Bankers Life Fieldhouse and stuff, but I'm sure that those are good venues for them too. But they do. You know, Market Square was a great venue.
That was. I remember seeing concerts at Market Square.
For most people, some people, I still see some bad comments about it sometimes. So.
It depends on where you sit there.
Totally depended on the show that you saw there. I mean, I saw Jimmy Page and Robert Plant, and that's one of the great shows of all time, I think. And then, you know, I saw a Tom Petty show there where it was just, you know, a cloud of pot smoke because he was playing so many slow songs in a row.
Yeah.
So it really depended on the show.
Well, I remember seeing Kiss there, and that was, I have to say, one of the loudest concerts I've ever been to. Well, thank you guys so much. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you about music in Indiana. I appreciate your time. I do want to thank all of our guests today. Mark Allen, a former music critic for the Indy Star. Dave Lindquist, entertainment journalist and host of The Beat on 92.3 WTTS. And also Steve Simsman was a longtime concert promoter in the state. I'm Taylor Bennett. Thanks so much for listening today. This is All In.